Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In the studio today on this Medical Monday is Dr. Daniel Brox, an ophthalmologist with Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons in Fishkill and the director of ophthalmology at Vassar Brothers Medical Center in Poughkeepsie. Dr. Brox specializes in LASIK, corneal transplants, and general ophthalmic care, and is one of the few ophthalmologists in New York trained in DSAC. That's an alternative to traditional corneal transplant. He also started the dry eye clinic at Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons. Dr. Brox earned his medical degree at Tufts University School of Medicine. He completed his internship at Mount Auburn Hospital at Harvard University and his residency at the North Shore Long Island Jewish Hospital System. He also completed his fellowship at Mount Sinai, specializing in cornea, external disease, and refractory surgery. He's a member of the American Academy of Ophthalmology and the American College of Surgeons. So, if you want to get to talk to him, there are people calling already. You should do it now because a lot of people want to know about eye surgery. Dr. Brox, are you ready for the challenge?
I'm ready. Thank you very much for having me here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and we're really flattered that you've really come all the way up here. So let's go to Johanna in New Paltz. Okay, Johanna, you're on.
Thank you. Could you kindly speak on the connection between retina problems, especially, and macular degeneration, age-related macular degeneration, on the one side, and on the other, on sleep, length or lack thereof, and exercises for the eyes, relaxation also included.
Now, Johanna, it sounds like a PhD orientation, so we're going to have to leave it at that and let the doctor try to answer some of the questions.
But if I may just, going to be 86.
Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Okay. Thank you, Johanna, for that question. Appreciate it. It's a good question. Unfortunately, there's not any great studies that have shown a connection between the lack of sleep and macular degeneration yet at this point. However, I'm certainly a firm believer that lack of sleep can affect almost anything we do medically. So that's of importance to anything we're ever talking about. With macular degeneration, the other things I'm sure we'll get to here today are what we can do with our diet, what we can do with sunlight exposure. These things can certainly affect macular degeneration, are some of the few things we can do day to day by protecting our eyes with sunglasses and eating the proper diet that can actually improve our risk of macular degeneration.
So do we know that sunlight causes macular degeneration?
Now, absolutely. It's one of the risk factors. It's not the only risk factor, but if we look at the risk factors we know of, family history, our race, ethnicity, these are things we cannot do anything about, what's in our genes as of yet, what our family history is. But the amount of sunlight exposure that we have is certainly something that we can do something about. It's been proven many times in studies. So for anybody, but particularly for someone already with known macular degeneration, it's of the utmost importance that they're wearing sunglasses.
Now, do we have any idea whether or not vitamin D has any effect on macular degeneration?
We have not seen any connection between vitamin D and macular degeneration. Yeah. However, there's a very large, complex study that was done by the National Eye Institute that did show very clearly that vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, copper, lutein, and zeaxanthin are the vitamins that are necessary to help prevent macular degeneration. It's something called the AREDS study, AREDS. It's age-related eye disease study that every ophthalmologist knows about. It's the most important study that's ever been done related to diet, vitamins, and macular degeneration. So anyone with certain levels of macular degeneration should certainly be taking these vitamins if their primary doctor is clear it will not interact with any of their other medications or medical illnesses.
Joanna? What about exercises?
Exercise in the eye is always a good question. We get that question a lot. There have not been, I wish there were, there have not been any exercises that have been proven to help the eyes, except for one less common type of problem that children have with focusing up close, and we have these things called pencil push-ups that we have little children do sometimes to help their eyes focus up close. But for the adults, there is not a proven exercise that has been shown to improve macular degeneration or any other eye disease. So we do shy away from that because there are certainly a lot of people trying to sell different devices for exercise of the eyes, but they've not been shown to do anything yet.
Now, my question to you is, Daniel, what exactly is macular degeneration?
That's a great question, and it's probably the best place to start with it. But the very back surface of the eye is the retina, and that's where all the light is focused that comes into the eye. And those images are then sent to the brain. But that back surface is like a wallpaper on the back of the eye, the very center of which is called the macula. That's where our most important vision is, and our clearest vision is. That is an area that's affected by macular degeneration. What happens is the cells of the retina start to degenerate or die off or become non-functioning. Nobody knows exactly why that happens, but it tends to occur in the age-related type of macular degeneration as time goes by. There are many other genetic types and a whole books I could show you about different types of macular degeneration, but the most common one is age-related, and it tends to be that these cells get less healthy as time goes on. And we do split it up into two different types, which people with macular degeneration are very aware of: the dry type, which is a slower degeneration of these cells, and a wet type, which is more acute, happens more suddenly, changes in the vision, and it is due to bleeding in the retina in that very central area.
Johanna, am I allowed to ask whether you have it?
Yes.
And when did it come on?
Well, we noticed it about 3 years ago, and I'm going to be 86 in a few days.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it has been growing in the right eye particularly, but I also wonder about the computer and bad print and so forth. I notice that I get very, very tired. The more tired I get, the less I see.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to work each time, every day.
Yes.
So that's why the question.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's a great question as well. Very common. The most common reason that we're getting more blurry vision as time goes on, whether we're using the computer, or reading a book, or doing any close exercises with the eye, is because the eyes are actually getting dry and nothing to do with the macular degeneration itself. So we like to encourage people to take computer breaks, have some good lubricating drops with them whenever they're doing these activities. But as far as the macular degeneration goes, you're not going to worsen the macular degeneration by doing your computer work or your close activities like reading.
Johanna, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate
thank you.
It. Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Premier Medical Group, gastroenterology, urology, internal medicine, endocrinology, geriatrics, nephrology, and pulmonology, with offices throughout the Hudson Valley. PremierMedicalHV.com. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance, November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs. CurranCompliance.com. Women's Health and Fitness Expo, Miller's School, Kingston, featuring dance, yoga, Pilates, nutrition workshops, and more. 8:30 to 4 p.m., May 3rd. Sponsored in part by MarkerTech. Women'sHealthExpo.com. And Massmocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting David Newman Dance on April 26th and The Russian Doctor on May 9th. Massmocha.org.
one 800 348 2551. Your chances of getting in now are, well, I'm going to tell you the truth, about 100%. At the end of the show, you won't get near it. So if you want to talk to Dr. Daniel Bronx, who's really top in his field, this is a time to let us know. Okay, Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Could you speak about the newer treatments for astigmatism and possibly also go into vitreous degeneration?
Sure, that's a good question. Two different questions, of course. The first is astigmatism, and this is, first off, something that a lot of people struggle with in just in terms of understanding what exactly it is, but we basically have three types of prescriptions that people get when you get your eyeglasses or contact lenses. You get your nearsighted prescription, which means without your glasses, you're a person that can see near. Your farsighted prescription, which means the opposite generally. And your astigmatism prescription, which is almost like a mixture of the two. But astigmatism refers to the front of the eye not being completely round. It's shaped more like a football. And when light hits it, it goes in two different directions. And we need a certain type of prescription, either with glasses or contact lenses, to correct that. There aren't that many new treatments for astigmatism at this point, except we've always had glasses, which are more finely tuned than ever. We do have a lot of newer contact lenses, which give people with astigmatism the much clearer vision than they were to have in the past. We always have hard contact lenses. Most of the contact lenses that people wear are soft contact lenses, which actually, because of the way they work, they just sit on the curvature of the eye itself. They don't improve astigmatism as well as a hard contact lens, but a hard contact lens improves astigmatism greatly, but is a little more difficult to take control of and clean. And other than that, we can do some astigmatism treatment with laser treatments these days, but it is still limited in the degree of astigmatism it can fix.
Jim, anything else?
Well, the vitreous degeneration.
Yeah. Yes, that was a separate question, of course. That's a good question as well, which a lot of people ask us. The vitreous gel is the gel in the back of the eye. It fills up our eye, and when we're born, it's stuck up against the wall in the eye. So when you look around, it doesn't move around. You're looking right through this nice, clear gel. As time goes by, that degeneration you're referring to is actually the liquefaction of that gel. It's getting pockets of fluid stuck in it. So now you're starting to see these little dots floating around, these little waves that are floating around in that gel that was there. And that's a normal process that happens to all of us. What's not normal is if we suddenly see a lot of new floaters or a lot of new flashing lights or a lot of waves all of a sudden. This can be the sign of a retinal tear or retinal detachment. So we want to be very careful that anybody that notices new floaters or new waves in their vision all of a sudden, they come right in. The same floater that's been sitting there forever, that's a sign of a little pocket of fluid floating around in that jelly. But any changes, you do want to tell your eye doctor about.
So how do you, so if you have this vitreous degeneration, mm-hmm. How do you fix it? If let's say there is a tear in the retina.
Right. So there's two sides to that. One is when you get those new floaters, you come in and you see your eye doctor. They look at it and they say, you know, this is just this normal degeneration of the gel. Then the next follow-up question from the patient is always, what can I do to fix that? And the answer is usually not much. However, the brain over time does tend to ignore those dots. Just like the blood vessels that are right in front of us all day long, every day, our brain has learned to ignore those. So you don't walk around seeing the retina blood vessels right in front of your vision.
Interesting.
These dots that are there, the same thing happens. Now, people will say, I've had the same floater for years. I don't see it most of the time. But once in a while, that light will hit it just right. They'll see it for a split second again. They have tried actual treatments in the past, one of which was a laser, when you would laser these large floaters. And people hated that. One large floater would become 20 tiny floaters, and that wasn't a winner. So they stopped doing that a long time ago. And there is a surgery that removes all the gel from the eye that is commonly done in diabetics for certain problems that they have.
Right.
You could do the same thing for removing floaters, but no ophthalmologist would ever recommend it because it's a high-risk surgery for a very just annoying thing. So there's not a great treatment for that. A retinal tear, on the other hand, which you mentioned, that if that's what's causing your floaters, that is an emergency to be treated with either a laser treatment or a surgery to get your retina back in the position that it should be.
Okay, Jim, anything else?
I guess that's about it for today.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Kathy in Liberty. Kathy in Liberty, you're on.
Hi. I am calling about LASIK surgery for my daughter, who has been very nearsighted for many years. She's 25 now, and she's been told she's a good candidate for laser. I said LASIK. I think it's laser surgery.
Both are accurate.
Oh, okay. So what exactly is involved with it is part one. And part two is she lives in Arizona. So how can I help her find a really good surgeon? I mean, is this done so commonly now that almost anyone who's doing it is going to be okay, or
well, those are all good questions, absolutely. The first resource, I'll answer the last part first, the American Academy of Ophthalmology. They have a website, aao.org, where you can get a lot of general information about the general term we use is laser vision correction. LASIK is a little more specific, which I'll explain. But if you're looking for resources or physicians that commonly do the procedure, every ophthalmologist does do different procedure these days, that's a very good resource for you to start with, aao.org. Now, I do laser vision correction, and laser vision correction is more the general term to describe surgery we do to get people less dependent on their glasses or contact lenses. And again, that's to get them less dependent. So even after laser vision, some people may find in certain situations, like high demand situations, like driving at night or in unfamiliar areas or low lighting conditions, they may still need glasses for certain things, but they won't need them as much as they needed them, obviously, before the procedure.
What do you do?
For laser vision correction? So the biggest part of laser vision is deciding who is a good candidate and who is not a good candidate. So anybody that comes in, first of all, I only do it if you're 21 or over. The reason there is you want to make sure someone's prescription has not been changing at all. If it's still changing, you want to wait on it. And then we do a very involved examination of their cornea, that very front surface of the eye. So when you look at someone's colored part of the eye, their iris, blue, brown, whatever it may be, there's a clear dome of tissue over that. And the laser treatment that we do is etching your prescription right on the surface of that cornea, whatever your prescription may be, so that that contact lens you were putting there or the glasses you were putting there is no longer necessary as it was before. But the key to laser vision correction, it's a very commonly done procedure these days, is to find out who's the right candidate. And in my practice, and I believe most ophthalmologists are, you want to be very careful that you're choosing people that have the right shape of eyes, the right prescriptions, and there's a laundry list of different measurements we take and calculations that we do to make sure that as best we can, and we can do this pretty well, we're not doing on laser vision on people whose cornea it will damage, because that can be a very bad outcome and very serious. So you want to go to someone that does do it very regularly and that can give you a thorough examination. And one of the most important questions I always tell people to ask is, how many people do you turn away? And if they shy away from that question or they find that bothersome, that question, that's not a good sign. If they are upfront with you and say something like, I turn away more people than I do, that's a better sign. That means they're not relying on just doing it and doing it when it may not be appropriate. And if I could just quickly, I'll describe LASIK surgery, and the other type is called PRK. And the difference between these two types, and they go back and forth about which one the ophthalmologist prefer, but LASIK is when you actually cut a flap in that cornea tissue, fold it back, do the laser treatment, and then put the flap back into place. So there is cutting involved, whether it be with a laser instrument or an actual blade, whereas PRK is easier on the eye. You just gently brush the eye and it heals in over the next 2 weeks or so. And it's not as much risk, but does take longer to heal. So there's a constant balance there between those two procedures. And my preference in people, the lower risk procedure is called PRK, but it does require a little more patience for you to get the end result.
Kathy, we're going to let you go. There are a lot of people behind you. We thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Bill in Charlton. Bill, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering, actually, my question was similar to your previous caller, but my eye doctor, my primary eye doctor, also indicated that I was not a good candidate for LASIK or laser surgery. And I was wondering, which you did answer some of my questions just with the prior caller, but would a regular eye doctor be able to make that that recommendation, and or would you suggest I go see somebody else for a second opinion?
Okay, that's a great question as well. When you say your regular eye doctor, you're referring to an optometrist or an optician or an ophthalmologist, or you're not sure?
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, say, you know, he's a doctor. I mean, it's not like the eye center.
Right. Well, that's okay. The reason I asked that question is because different of those doctors have different instruments in how they evaluate. I would say the most important question would be, did they tell you why you're not a candidate? Did they describe that to you?
I'm older. I just turned 50, so my eyes are constantly, you know, my prescription has changed a little from year to year, but I didn't really understand his explanation.
So there are a lot of different reasons, as I alluded to before, about why laser vision may not be correct for a person. But one of those reasons is because they don't think you're going to get that much out of it. If our eyes are beginning to have little changes in the lens in the eye, that's what we call a cataract, it cannot be visually significant to you day to day. But in the very, very early stages, it can commonly make our prescription start to change a little bit again. If your prescription is continually changing when you see your eye doctor, that's like hitting a moving target. If I do laser on you today, you'll say in 6 months, why is my vision blurry again? Because you have a little new prescription that's come on there. So
is the idea to take the cataract out first before you do the laser?
Well, if you truly have a full cataract, which it doesn't sound like he has just yet, but if someone has a full cataract, there would be no benefit to doing laser vision on them, because a cataract is a cloudy lens in the eye and blocks your vision. So no matter what eyeglass you put on that person, no matter what contact lens you put on that person, the lens inside the eye is cloudy. It's like looking through a cloudy window.
But when you have that operation, is your doctor likely to try to straighten your vision out at the same time?
Correct, exactly. Yeah, sure. That's one of the luxuries, sort of an added bonus we have today that we never had before with cataract surgery, but the lenses, when you have cataract surgery, your cloudy lens is removed from your eye and a plastic lens is implanted that's crystal clear. That lens can now have many different options of prescriptions.
Interesting. Bill, thank you for the call. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah. Let's go to Leslie in New Paltz. Leslie in New Paltz, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have two quick questions. The first is, there's an eye doctor in my area that recommends, when you have your eyes tested, to giving the patient a prescription for the opposite prescription. The purpose of that would be to strengthen your eye muscles, I guess, to help heal your eyes. And I'll let you answer that. And my second question is, I buy my eyeglasses for reading in the drugstore where they just enhance it, you know, it goes up numbers. And it's not a prescription glass. Do those eyeglasses in the drugstore harm your eyes?
Okay, those are two great questions and two very common questions. The first one regarding the opposite prescription, I'm not sure exactly what they're referring to there. It's not terms that we use generally when we describe prescriptions, but sometimes we do give people a lower prescription to have them work through to see if they're able to focus a little bit in certain situations without the assistance of the eyeglass. Sometimes by giving a lower prescription, you're actually assisting the person in having better reading vision. In other words, if somebody needs glasses for far away and you give them their full prescription to see far away, it will cut down a lot on their ability to read or see up close. So some doctors do cut back on the prescription, but giving an opposite prescription or a completely different prescription from what was intended is not done. The second part of your question about the eyeglasses over the counter is a very common one. Now, eyeglasses over the counter for reading, essentially, is something that's commonly used by people. If you use no glasses for anything else, those prescriptions can be used for you. They will absolutely do no harm to you. The worst you would do if you accidentally picked up the completely wrong number off that rack, you would give yourself a bit of a headache, but you would never do any harm to your eyes. That being said, you'll certainly get clearer vision by having a more finely tuned prescription done at your optical store, but you'll still get by with those glasses for reading in most cases.
I just wanted to add one thing that has happened to me and that might happen to anybody else. I want to warn you, when you do cataract surgery or whatever else, and they're going to straighten out your vision, including your reading vision, they'll hand you a book and say, hold the book where you usually read. Now, most of us don't know where we usually read. So now you're guessing, you know, at that, and that can cause problems.
Absolutely. I think I try to spend a lot of time with my patients when they come in discussing their daily activities with them, just like you're saying, what distances are you working at? Because everyone's very different. If I just try to write the traditional prescription for everybody, we're going to run into trouble. But when you go in to see your eye doctor, some people, I encourage them the next time they come to even take out a tape measure. How far away is your computer from you while you're doing your computer work? How far away is your laptop? Where do you like to read? Right on the spot to be asked that question for the first time, often is you're not going to get a very accurate answer.
Right, that's right. And if you guess wrong, too bad. Hey, Leslie, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Ellie in Rhinebeck. You're on.
Hey, Ellie. Did you say on?
You're on.
Okay, I'm calling about central vision. And as I understand it, when you lose your central vision, you lose it suddenly and permanently, and not just a little bit of it. It's all gone. Now, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, well, that's an excellent question, too. There's many, many reasons that one can lose their central vision, the most common of which is macular degeneration, which we discussed a little bit before. There are also several issues that can occur in the eye where we lose central vision that can return. So it's essential, if you're having that issue, that you need to see the ophthalmologist, have them do a dilated exam where they look at the back of the eye, specifically that retina and right in the center of the retina. And we often do computer imaging, which is very, very useful that we never had before, where we use a computer to actually map out the retina, and we can see in that retina where is the issue, where is the swelling, where is the bleeding occurring, what is the problem. If it's macular degeneration, what can we do? Sometimes there are things we can do. If it's another issue, what can we do? So to tell you exactly for every person whether central vision will come back or not really depends on what the underlying issue is.
With older people, would it be more likely to be permanent?
Well, in an older age, it's more likely to be macular degeneration. And with macular degeneration, when you notice that change, you want to really get in to see the ophthalmologist as soon as possible. A sudden change in the center vision can, again, be that wet macular degeneration. We never used to have a treatment for that. We do have a treatment for that, which does regain a lot of the vision now that we never had before, and it's actually a medicine we put in the eye. So if you're having that trouble, it's something you do want to get checked very soon.
Okay, Ellie, we're going to have to let you go. We got a lot of people behind you. All the phones are ringing. Thanks very much for calling. Yeah. Let's go to Naeem of Albany. Okay, Naeem.
Yeah, I don't know if you replied to this question before or not. I caught you late. What is the success rate of lens implant for the cataract patients?
That's a great question. That's a very common surgery, cataract surgery. Again, that's that lens getting cloudy in the eye, the doctor replacing that cloudy lens with a plastic lens in the eye. The success rate of it at this point is very, very high. Of a severe complication, a vision-threatening or vision loss complication is far less than 1% at this point.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And what is the effect if the person have vitreous degeneration in the back of his eye?
From the lens replacement surgery?
Yep.
They are unrelated for the most part, although sometimes people notice a few more floaters in their vision in the postoperative period for those first couple of months, which generally resolves. Mm-hmm. But one should not usually disturb the other, but sometimes we do see that where there's a few more floaters, a few more waves in the vision that do tend to subside over time.
Thank you very much, Naeem. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye. Let's go to George in Pittsfield. George, you're on.
Doctor, I wanted to get your opinion on visual restorative therapy. My background is I had an aortic valve replacement done 5 years ago and suffered a stroke, which was, I guess, an artifact of the surgery and left me with a blind spot in my upper left quadrant. And the stroke was an occipital hemorrhagic stroke. And I have heard that there are some companies who are touting this visual restorative therapy as a way to utilize the plasticity of the brain to take over the visual function in another part of the brain. And have you heard about that, and what's your cut on that?
That's a great question. It's absolutely an area that's being researched at this point. I mean, unfortunately, the short answer is that there is no treatment at this time, but I can tell you the longer answer is there's a lot of research being done in that area, and I'm always telling my patients with this exact same issue that stay tuned, because I think we're getting closer and closer every day with learning how to regenerate these nerves in the brain, the optic nerve, just like we're learning to regenerate spinal cord tissue as well. These are all related issues.
Yeah, the device that I looked at that I researched on the internet basically uses a technique with a computer program on your own computer and a mechanical device that keeps your eyes at the same distance. And it's like doing a peripheral vision test. They flash little dots.
Right. I have seen that device, and I can tell you certainly no study has shown it to be helpful. And I could also tell you, of course, we hope they find things soon, but when you have anything like this, there are always people trying to sell you different devices and things that have not yet been proven. So you do want to be careful, but that obviously sounds like a harmless thing to try, but you do want to be careful with anything that has not been studied at this point.
Yeah, my cut on it was basically what you said.
Yes, right.
I couldn't find any, I haven't been able to find any substantiation for its effectiveness. And it is a very time-consuming and expensive route to take.
Hey, George, I'm so sorry, but we got to take a break right now, or I'm going to get it from my our engineer here. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Alan.
Bye. Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, sponsoring Spring to Life, a symposium on blood cancers for healthcare professionals, patients, survivors, and families. May 3rd at the Desmond Hotel, NewYorkOncology.com. Marriott Town Place Suites, Albany Downtown, offering studio, one- and two-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. TPSAlbany.com for reservations. St. Mary's Healthcare, Amsterdam, New York, offering minimally invasive spine surgery. Choose stmarys.com. And Washington County Fiber Tour, highlighting 15 fiber farms and a fiber mill. Open barns with animals and studios with fiber arts. April 26th and 27th, WashingtonCountyFiberTour.org.
And we are back. We're delighted that you're all with us today. Lots of calls. We've got a Don and Stan in Saratoga Springs. Okay, Dan, you're on.
How you doing, guys? Alan, big fan. Doc, just have a quick question. I have a twitch in my left eye that seems to happen quite frequently. I don't have high blood pressure. Just had a physical the other day. I'm a police officer. There's a fair amount of stress in my job, but it's never seemed to affect me before like this, and it seems that this year it's been happening quite a lot more often. So, again, it's in my left eye. It seems to be a good solid switch every once in a while. I would say at least twice a day I have it. Can you give me a little heads up on that, and what should I be looking for?
Right, so this is a twitch of the eyelid around the eye?
Correct.
Okay.
It's actually on the far side. It's actually, you know, on the outside of my eye.
Right. It's a very common condition. It sounds like you've had it for quite some time off and on, and that's not unusual. We do see it most commonly in things you already suggested about in people that have a little additional stress that mm-hmm. does tend to bring it on. We're not exactly sure why that is. Some of the things that do help calming it down is doing a nice warm soak on that area, or sometimes the eyes themselves are just a little irritated in an area underneath the lid, and using a good lubricant drop really, really regularly for a little while can help to calm it down. If it does not calm down, we call it a blepharospasm. That's just the fancy doctor word for an eyelid spasm or muscle twitch. We can use a medication that's very commonly known to everyone. We use Botox, which we inject in the muscle there and calms it down. That's sort of our last resort if it doesn't calm down on its own. But interestingly enough, this is what Botox was actually FDA approved for when it was first approved by the FDA for hemifacial or side-of-the-face spasms and blepharospasms, not for the things that we generally think about. But I would certainly have an ophthalmologist take a look at it to see which is appropriate for you.
Understood. All right, sir. Thank you very much. Hey, you guys have a great day.
Thanks, Dan. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Two lights blinking, three available. These go fast, folks. Get online. Don in Great Barrington. Hi, neighbor. What's up?
Hey, neighbor. I understand I'm in good company with a lot of people who have a different prescription for their two eyes. And I'm thinking about, and I have used those over-the-counter eyeglasses, and they seem to work all right. But is that an extra strain, and do you have a technique maybe so that the eyes will stay healthy and making up for that difference in prescription? Thank you.
Right. That's an excellent question. The issue there is one that people have a lot of trouble with, but you're in a large group of people that those drugstore glasses just sometimes don't cut it, meaning you have a different prescription in both eyes, and of course the glasses that you buy at the drugstore only come in one prescription for both eyes. Now, when you put them on, depending on a prescription, your brain may be just focusing a little bit more with that eye the prescription's correct for and turning off the other one a little bit. Similar to the other caller, the worst you're going to get with that is a headache. You're not going to cause any trouble with your eyes. But if you really want that nice, clear reading vision, you're going to require going and getting a specific pair made just for you. So you can stick with these if you'd like, but if you're really starting to get a little bothered by them, you can get an eyeglass made with a more specific prescription for
you.
Sure.
And Don, I hope that you have a really good stock market account, because some of these glasses can cost a lot of money.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Wait. But I also want you to ask the doctor a question, which has occurred to me very quickly. Doctor, at some points I've had a lot of reading glasses. So we have about, 30 pairs of reading glasses in our house because you just buy them. What rule of nature is it that all reading glasses end up in one place and that the rest of them are never anywhere else to be found?
That's always the case. You can only find the ones that are old and have the wrong prescription. The correct prescription are always hidden somewhere. But I'll tell you, that brings up something just real quick. The Lions Eye Club, they actually collect old glasses and donate them to people that need them. So just like you already mentioned, glasses are getting ridiculously expensive. So these people, there are people there that really need these glasses. So if you do have a big pile of them floating around,
well,
you
do they clean them?
They clean them. They measure them.
Okay.
And then they
clean is important if you take stuff in your ear, get stuff out of your ear.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Let's go to Larry in Goshen. Larry, you're on.
Hi. I have two questions briefly. I have a neovascularization of the choroid, which means I got damage to my retina, which is apparently irreversible due to progressive myopia. So I don't think there's any on the horizon, but I guess I wanted to know if there's anything in the works that might affect me in the next 10 years. And the second is I have cloudiness behind one lens because I had two cataracts removed, and I'm told that I might increase the light coming into my eye, but not the detailed perception. The question is, am I risking a retinal detachment by having laser surgery to clear that cloudiness up?
Okay, great. That's a complex question for sure. So you refer to that choroidal neovascularization. So just underneath the retina is the choroid, which is sort of a hidden part, and that's the blood supply. That's supposed to stay behind the retina. The retina is supposed to stay in front of it. Sometimes we get breaks in that lower level of the retina, and that blood vessels start to grow through it. Now, choroidal neovascularization is what happens in macular degeneration, myopic degeneration, and a lot of other degenerations. So that's a more general term I was alluding to in the beginning about macular degeneration. You can have degeneration of the retina from so many different things. But with myopic degeneration, like I'm sure you know all too well, is that retina is really stretched out because your eye is a bit elongated. That's what makes us nearsighted. And we get breaks in that retina where these new blood vessels from the choroid grow into, and they cause bleeding. So if you have ever any sudden episodes of bleeding, or in other words, a sudden episode of change in vision, right now that is treated in the same way that macular degeneration is treated oftentimes, with an injection of medicine that's put in the eye for new areas of choroidal neovascularization. So you want to discuss that certainly with your ophthalmologist. Right. And the second point you brought up was, I believe, about cataract surgery for yourself.
I had the surgery, and they said that some cloudiness, which apparently occurs often, it's a little scar tissue, and that could be cleared up by laser surgery. But I'm also told that with my size eyeballs, I have an increased chance of a retinal detachment, and therefore I've avoided having this surgery done. So that's
absolutely. To add on to that, Doc, I had that too, and after the there's something that happens where they do a little pop, and then everything is okay. Is that different?
No, that is the same idea. Yeah. So what you're referring to is a little opacification of the new plastic lens in the eye. So it gets a little cloudy on the back surface of that lens. Very, very common. Some people get it a few months after cataract surgery. Yeah. Some people get it 10 years after cataract surgery. A little film grows essentially on the back surface of that lens. That can be cleaned off, like you suggested, with a laser treatment. The real only risk of that laser treatment, it's incredibly low risk though, is a retinal detachment or retinal tear. Now, you're having a higher nearsightedness, are a little more at risk for that for sure than the average person. Your real risk of having a retinal detachment came at the time of your cataract surgery. That has a high risk for someone with myopic degeneration. I would say, obviously, discuss with your ophthalmologist, but if they firmly believe that you're going to get a very significant improvement in your vision from doing that laser.
No, they said it wouldn't. They said it was about a 1 chance in 100 of a retinal detachment, and I felt that I was a little more risky than I wanted because I have one good eye, and this would be in the poorer vision eye.
Right. So you do want to be careful for sure, and you mostly want to make sure if you're going to do anything that it's going to help you. So they always should be able to tell you, oh, I think that may help a little bit. I don't think it's going to help much, or I think you're going to have an amazing return if you do that. And that can sometimes help guide you about whether or not it's worth it.
Now, Larry, we're going to let you go because we're almost at the end of the show.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's go to we're into the lightning round now. Let's go to Lee in Clifton Park. Lee, go.
Yes, I was calling to see if a doctor knows of any recent therapies for morning glory discs.
No, there's no recent
therapy. We need to know what morning glory disc is. Yeah.
Well, this, of course, this is a shape and developmental issue of the optic nerve when it's coming into the eye that does not develop the same as it should in its connection in the back of the eye. So it's an issue with the optic nerve again, and with the optic nerve itself and nerve tissue, we don't have a way of regrowing that tissue or creating new tissue, but that would be the key eventually is to be able to regrow or rebuild optic nerve tissue, whether it be someone with glaucoma, which is an optic nerve problem, or somebody with a congenital issue of how the nerve was formed.
So in terms of stem cell research, you haven't heard anything specific to morning glory disc therapy?
Right. There is nothing specific, but that is an area where maybe the answer might lie. But I do know of a lot of places purporting to have an answer with stem cells, but there's certainly absolutely nothing that's shown anything to be successful, unfortunately, with stem cells at this point. But I think that may be the way we're going with the research.
Okay. Lee, thank you very much. Okay, and we'll go to Diana in Rhinebeck. Diana, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I had a retinal detachment in my left eye several years ago, and subsequently, of course, I had to have cataract surgery in that eye because of it was corrected with a double buckle, so that caused the cataract. Mm-hmm. Now, I see, when I look up at the moon and I put my hand just over that, over my right eye and look with my left eye, I see like 4 moons. Mm-hmm. And I've asked my eye doctor, why do I have, why do I see 4 of those? And she said, well, put some dry eye medication and then look. I did. I tried it several times. I still see 3 or 4 moons. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about that, if what that is.
And this is out of the eye that you've had the retinal detachment repair?
Yes.
Yes. So when you've had, you referred to a buckle, and that's just very quickly a little buckle made of plastic that they put around the outside of the eye to help repair a retinal detachment. But in doing so, often you get a very odd shape in the front of the eye. And by odd, I mean a prescription that is a little more unusual. So it frequently will require a lot of work to find a way to get someone not seeing peculiar shapes or elongations or distortions like you're describing. Whether they can do something for you just in terms of with a glass or a contact lens, or sometimes it requires even a hard contact lens to get rid of so much distortion, maybe something worth looking at with your doctor. Certainly, sometimes just dryness can affect it. I think that's what they were trying out first, but it sounds like maybe you need more than that.
Yeah, no, I did try the dry stuff, and that didn't do anything.
Right.
But I already have a lens inside my eye since the... You mean I should get another lens on the outside, a contact lens?
Possibly. The answer may lie there, depending on how the health of your retina is as well, but sometimes it's an issue which you need to work on with a glass exactly in front of the eye or a contact lens on the eye if that retina is healthy enough and if that's not the issue.
Hey, Diane, I wish we could give you more time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, Carolyn in Red Hook. Carolyn.
Yeah, hi. I had two questions. One's kind of quick. I have a niece that has something called either Leber's amaurosis or Ammers-Leberosis, and I wondered what the cause was. And the second question is personal. For me, I have the beginning stages of cataracts, very beginning apparently, and I'm wondering if things like vitamin A and some other supplements might help retard the growth.
Now, doctor, we have to really keep this going here because we're almost done.
Absolutely. So Leber's, unfortunately, is a genetic issue with the development of the retina, back of the eye, and the optic nerve. And this issue is not something that has a treatment yet at this point, although there's some genetic studies, genetic treatments that are being tried out, which you may want to look at on the Academy website. And as far as vitamins and cataracts, we're really not sure of any vitamin that can help prevent cataracts. Some people feel sunglasses will help help prevent the onset of cataracts, but generally speaking, there's no treatment. Cataracts are kind of going to do what they want to do over time, and there's not too much money that should be spent on preventative measures like medications, eye drops, or other things to prevent cataracts, because unfortunately something like that just does not exist.
And protecting your eyes from sunlight wouldn't have prevented the cataracts?
Correct. I mean, there's never been a study that's shown that. Otherwise, we would always expect all these people down in Texas and Florida and those places to have more cataracts than everybody else, and it's just not the case. So wearing sunglasses is important, like I mentioned already, for macular degeneration and some other eye problems. But for cataracts, it's never been shown to make a difference one way or the other.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've been asked to give your phone number.
Oh, great. It's 845.
845-896-9280.
That's us at Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons.
One more time.
Hudson Valley Eye Surgeons at 845-896-9280.
Okay, very quickly, Chuck in Spencertown. Chuck, we are almost out of time. Go ahead.
Yes, doctor. I have strabismus, and I just wondered if there was any new treatments.
Okay, first of all, doc, what is strabismus?
Strabismus is a crossing of the eyes. Traditionally, in lay terms, people used to call it lazy eye when I was turning in or out. We in the medical field never used that term, but that's what some people may ring a bell when they hear that term. But strabismus is the technical term for when the eyes are crossing. It can be something someone was born with, congenital, or something that's brought on later on in life. The real treatment is usually surgical, but we have to be very careful with a surgical treatment of someone with crossing eyes. They're usually focusing with one eye or the other eye throughout the day. If you try to then do surgery and force them to see with both eyes, a lot of the time it can result in them seeing double vision. So it's an unwanted occurrence when you have that surgery. So absolutely you want to go with your ophthalmologist and have them do a couple of studies to tell you what's the chances of you having double vision after that surgery if it's something you choose to do.
Oh, boy. Okay, yeah. Chuck, I wish we had more time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, doctor.
Okay. And I think that's sort of got to be it for now. We are out of time. I'm very apologetic to Karen in Chatham, and she's getting ready for cataract surgery. And Karen, we wish you well.
Absolutely.
Not a thing to worry about. I went too. It's good. I would also like to thank Dr. Daniel Brox for joining us today. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Toprosin, natural medicine formula creams designed to heal muscles, joints, nerves, and skin conditions, including shingles and eczema. Toprosin.com. Thanks again for joining us on The Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. He's not wearing a hat today. It must be the change in seasons. Your calls were, there it is, New York Yankees hat. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall, who books the guests and who is terrific. Also, a reminder, make sure you take WAMC with you. Download our new mobile app for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and more. Just go to iTunes or to Google Play app store, search WAMC and play. Oh, I see. Google Play app store, search WAMC and install. I'm Alan Chartok. Now stay tuned now for a news update.